Blog Talk Radio.
On a debris.
Book club. Last week we brought in author Deborah Vankin for a little discussion with former Tokyo Pop editor Louis Reyes, and they discussed a little bit of why and how and all the backstory of how the book graphic novel Posers just released from Image Comics came to be. And as many of you know, a graphic novel or a comic book doesn't just come about. There's a whole team of people involved that throw in their little talents and make this thing what it is. And this week, this Easter weekend, we've brought in the longtime legendary comic book creator and illustrator of not only Posers, but a whole handful of other beautiful works of art, including Gen 13, Live Wires, Kabuki Arsenal, the list goes on. Ladies and gentlemen, Rick Mays. Rick, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I didn't know about the legendary part. I guess I missed that legend.
Well, you know, I definitely think that the term legendary gets overused in the book world, but I once heard John Updike speak years ago, and he said that he likes to refer to any author or creator of anything literary that sticks it out for more than three works, that they deserve the term legendary. So, but I can definitely see how somebody can be put off by it. Well, anyway, Rick, welcome. It's Easter weekend. I hope that you relaxed and ate a lot of chocolate today.
Not so much chocolate, but I did, in fact, eat a lot. Thank you very much
good,
for having
good,
me.
Good, good, good. Well, thanks for coming on. And so, first, I think that, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that are listening to this or may listen to it as an MP3 later on that are familiar with your career or what you do. But for those that don't, can you give us just a quick little backstory of how you ended up doing this and why you do it?
Well, the why part is probably the simpler. As I guess a teenager, reading comics and seeing, you know, different artists, some of them really stuck and really made me want to actually draw, you know, guys like Adam Hughes and people of that nature. And as I got a little older, you know, out of high school and dropping out of art school, I just wondered if I would ever have the opportunity or ever, more importantly, be good enough to put anything out there that anyone saw that would affect them the way that my favorite artist affected me. So I was really interested in pursuing doing comics. I had been doing them with my friends, you know, underground comics in high school, and I had never really seriously pursued the craft of learning to be an effective storyteller until I was, I guess, 21 and working in a comic book store and wanted to do some submissions and see if I could actually get a gig professionally. And so when the time came that I was doing my submissions, and this is how I actually got in, and it's a long story, I'll try to condense it. I was at the time just focused on seeing if I could get my foot in the door at Marvel and DC. And I basically just sent off submissions to DC, and an editor was willing to meet with me, but I couldn't get anyone's attention at Marvel. So I basically just picked an editor and just kept spamming his phone, just kept calling him and calling him saying, "Can I send you something? Can I send you something?" Because they weren't in the habit of really making appointments for anyone. And I got under this guy's skin to the point where he said, "Look, if you just send a package of submissions addressed to me, I promise I'll open them. Don't worry, I will remember you. Just don't call me anymore. Just address it to me, and I'll look." And I said, "Okay, great." And I sent it off and hopped on a train and went to New York.
Yeah.
For my meeting with DC with Karen Berger. And I think I had been in New York a day, and I called back home, and my mom said, "Yeah, someone from Marvel's been calling. They're trying to get hold of you." So I called over to Marvel, and it was Glenn Herdling. And he said, "Where are you?" I said, "I'm in Brooklyn right now." He said, "Can you come in?" And I came in, and that's when I landed my first gig, which was Nomad. And upon starting to actually do comics for publication, I realized just how much I still had to learn.
Yeah, exactly.
That's basically how I got in.
Well, that kind of tactic, I mean, I guess as far as tenacity, that makes sense. But is that something that you would recommend to people to annoy or beat down the door of somebody at some place where you'd like to work?
I got lucky. When people ask me, you know, how would you go about getting in now? I honestly don't know. I do a lot of cons and show your work around a lot, but so little seems to be done by phone nowadays anyway. And if you don't have an editor's email, you can't really spam him. And even if you do, all he has to do is look at it and go, "I don't know this person." You're not going to get someone's attention by just emailing them. They'll just, you know, designate you to spam.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know. A friend of mine from back in high school, who was about a year older than me, and of our group, he was clearly the most talented of us. He actually had an in. I think Carl Potts had seen some of his work at a con and basically said, "You know, I want to have you do some sample pages, some Spider-Man sample pages, and see if you can do this professionally."
Sure.
And this was, geez, when did that happen? This was around the time he was grooming, you know, guys like Jim Lee and those guys. So it was a really good time for my friend. But we were teenagers, and he was really, really good. And when he did his sample pages and sent them in, and of course they're sample pages, it's not just a question of, well, can you do this? It's on sample pages, it's going to be, well, I'm going to send these back no matter how good they are and make you correct a bunch of stuff.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
That's what you're going to have to get accustomed to doing.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it. And when my friend got the samples back with the correction notes, he just kind of got annoyed and said, well, aren't you just going to pay me for these? And that, and basically, you know, the arrogance of youth pretty much closed the door on him, and he never really got in after that.
Huh.
And I didn't have the opportunity that he had. I just had to go a different tack. I honestly don't know what I would be doing if I were trying to get in now. The only thing I could think of is just to show your work around at a lot of cons, or try to find email addresses for editors of books that you like. But again, if they don't recognize you, they have no reason to open your email. I don't open emails that I don't recognize the sender.
Yeah.
And when I was in Marvel that first day, I actually walked in the office, and I can't remember who Glenn's assistant was at the time. I just remember he was really funny. But he was saying, I mean, you're lucky that – I can't remember who it was I actually sent them to that showed them to Glenn, my submissions. He said, you're lucky he opened them. I mean, we get stacks of them. I mean, look. And he showed me this huge stack of unopened – submissions that were just sitting there, and he shoved half of them into the garbage. Poof. You know, just I mean, we get too many to sift through. I mean, you're really lucky you got that guy's attention, because I mean, the odds of us actually seeing it were really, really low.
Sure.
So, I mean, I can only imagine being an editor and, you know, opening up your email in the morning and going, okay, what are the important emails that I have to address today? Wait a minute, what are all these? I'm not opening these. I mean, staying in can be extremely difficult, but getting in, if you don't actually know anyone, it requires determination and luck, I would think.
Yeah, and, you know, so much, as you know, it depends on people's moods of the day, and, you know, I mean, anything can happen. So it sounds like there was a lot of luck going on with you, on top of talent.
Yeah.
But,
well, it was also the early 90s.
Yeah.
And comics were just experiencing this huge boom. So if there was a time to get hired, that was probably a good time to be looking for work, because comics
mm-hmm.
were doing so well at the time.
And how is it different today than when you started? Would you rather be a newbie now?
No. Well, actually, I'm not even sure that that's the case. I'm now, for me, and I know it's not. This isn't unique to me, but I know a lot of people who have been in the industry for a long time struggle to get work. It's not it's not all that easy. If you're fresh out of art school, or you're just off the street and you don't command a high rate, it might
mm-hmm.
actually be really easy it might be easier, at least less difficult, to get gigs because you don't have any baggage. You have a
mm-hmm.
low rate, and someone says, well, I mean, this guy's going to do whatever he has to do to get the book in and to keep me happy. So, But I honestly, when the time comes that you're no longer really, really aggressively trying to get your next gig and gigs start coming to you, that's the point where it's like, okay, I would never go back to the way it was before. I really prefer it this way. I wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I don't have to try to get work now. I clearly do, but the climb in is not something that I would necessarily enjoy experiencing again.
Yeah. No, clearly not. So in regards to posers, I mean, how did you and Deb Vankin meet up, and how did this all start with you guys?
At the time, I was looking for projects to do, and I was just at the time happening across doing a pilot season issue of Cyblade for Top Cow, but I had also contacted Shelley at DC Vertigo, who I'd worked with on Zatanna Everyday Magic, and I adore Shelley Bond. She's great to work with. Anyone who hasn't worked with her, I highly recommend it. And I was asking her, what have you got going? And she said, in terms of actual issues, I don't really have anything, but we are doing these graphic novels, and the pay is quite different than what you're used to, and we're also not really looking for anybody with an aggressively Japanese style, but mm-hmm. if you're interested, I could see if one of those might suit you. And I said, well, sure. And she basically just described the three primary characters and said, can you draw up some character sketches to see if you can capture these characters? And Jenna, I remember this because I think Jenna was the only one with which this happened. My very first sketch of Jenna, she said, Deborah really loved it. She said, you just nailed it. I don't remember much about when I was whipping up Pori, but Mac, whatever I originally came up with was quite, it literally was, well, Deb sees him more this way, Deb sees him more that way, until I shaved him into exactly what it was Deborah was looking for. Sure. And once I had actualized the characters in a way that Deborah liked, it was pretty much a go. And from there, after I had finished that pilot season issue of Cyblade, I went ahead and started working on Posers.
Mm-hmm.
But we hadn't met or anything prior to that. Deborah wasn't even in graphic storytelling. That was her rookie gig for graphic storytelling, but it was really good to be working with someone who, how do I put this? I don't want to say carries the baggage of an experienced writer. That's not what I mean, but someone who doesn't have all the experience of, well, I write this and you draw exactly what I write because sure. I'm the writer and you're the artist, and it was all new to her. And
yeah.
While we weren't on the phone all the time, we were shooting emails back and forth, but it was interesting seeing somebody else experience it for the first time.
Hmm.
And Deborah was so nice and so cool that I actually kind of cared about her first comic book experience, because not all of mine have been all that great. So.
Yeah. So you mean she was – I mean, I think she talked about this a little bit last week as well, was that, you know, she kind of came at it from a producer's point of view, where she – you know, I mean, she's a writer. I mean, she's a creative person. She has her visuals of what she wants to do, and then bringing somebody else into the mix.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's always going to be you know, a little challenging at the times. I think I think of first-time comic book writers, you know, learning trial by error with somebody, you know, that's been around the block with you. I mean, it's like that, you know, she's really lucky that she fell into somebody's hands. You know, that cared about the book, cared about her, and you know, how do you think the book came out ultimately?
I actually haven't held it in my hands. I do not have a copy of it yet.
Uh-oh.
I remember the artwork as it left my desk, and I remember my impression of it, and I thought it was solid. It wasn't what I'm generally accustomed to doing. I'm either doing superhero stuff
mm-hmm.
or I'm doing something else that's action heavy or really moody. It's not as light and breezy as
sure.
as Posers. But mm-hmm. I liked the way that it came out. What was important to me at that time, again, because after having so many email conversations back and forth with Deborah, was that Deborah liked the way that it came out.
Good.
What I remember really is, or just anybody who's not on their first gig, anybody who's gone through it knows that the very first time you do something, whether you're writing it or you're drawing it or whatever, and it leaves your desk, that's your impression of it. What mm-hmm. left my desk, the work that I did, not thinking, what's it going to look like when the inker is finished with it? What's it going to look like when the colorist is finished with it? Mm-hmm. And my first, my earlier gigs, when I was working on Nomad, I was using a really line-heavy style, trying to literally paint everything with feathering, not just totally not thinking what it was going to look like colored and what it was, what my pencils were going to look like when somebody else inked mm-hmm. them. And that was really, really rough for me. For about a year, I was going, I'm going to have to reevaluate what I'm doing and change my style so that people can actually, so that once it leaves my hands, it's workable for other people, because what I'm doing now is just, it's throwing people. It's not, nobody's doing the stuff that, the way that I want it to look or whatever.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, and I could relate to Deborah. I mean, on one hand, she's written the words down and now she gets to see the pictures, but also, you know, that's, she wasn't hired to write a Spider-Man book. That's her book. Those are
yeah.
her characters and she cares
mm-hmm.
about them.
Mm-hmm.
And I really did want her to be happy with the end result, especially considering it was something I felt I could do.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, you know, draw the best Captain America ever. Like, who else has done? Oh, I don't think I can do the best one ever. It was just a matter of, well, I think I know what she wants. I know what she's going for, and I'm familiar with the setting and a lot of the general things that are going on in the scenes of the book. I know I can make her happy if I pay attention to what I'm doing.
Right on. Yeah, exactly. Well, as far, you know, I know that a lot of the direction for this book is geared towards, I mean, people of all ages, but it's supposed to capture a younger female audience.
Yeah,
is that anything?
A mixed book.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, is that anything that you have interest in pursuing in the future?
As far as doing work for people to see it, In that respect, I'm an attention whore.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone is willing to look at what I've done and go, wow, he's good, or wow, I like the way he did this, I would happily pander to any audience. But
mm-hmm.
working with something as I would say Disney-esque as Posers was new. It's certainly not something that I would refuse to do again, but I'm really at home when I'm trying to set up a scene and it looks like something out of the movie Seven,
or
The Crow, or that's
mm-hmm.
my comfort zone. In Light and Breezy as well, I can do it, but I would certainly do it again. Deborah's writing the sequel, and we're talking
yeah.
about doing that together again. And it's funny because I just sent her a Facebook message last night because it just crossed my mind. Look. Like my general arrogance, I'm sure that this hasn't occurred to Deborah, but I just said, I know you're writing the sequel, and I just wanted to mention, I'm sure it's occurred to you, but it's not a Poser's book anymore. I mean, it's not a Minx book anymore. You don't have those same limitations. If you want
sure.
it to be heavier, it can be, or it could be it's Light and Breezy as the first one, or even lighter, but I just wanted to
mm-hmm.
remind you, which it sounds really arrogant, because I know she already knows, but I just felt compelled to say, the tone of this book is up to you. It's not preset by the Minx line anymore. You can write it however you want.
Yeah.
But
and
my comfort zone is a little, you know, I like to try to make violence pretty and try to try to make it actually look like an action scene is moving by using
mm-hmm.
way too many panels and speed lines and things of that nature. But it's certainly something I wouldn't mind doing again if people are actually buying and enjoying Posers. I'd totally be happy to do it again. As long as people are actually enjoying it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you brought up a really interesting point. So, you know, I mean, originally this was a Minx book. And then when the Minx line was dropped, and, I mean, the book wasn't totally done yet, right?
Yes. I did it in 8 segments, and I was still on the 7th. When I got the news, and I went ahead and sent in that batch anyway, because I was still doing it, but I was really close to being, I was pretty close to being finished. I was maybe a month and a half away from being finished at the time that they shelved it.
And does, I mean, I guess, you know, in some circumstances, when a book gets to that point and is dropped or something happens for whatever reason, they can just disappear and be permanently shelved. Were you worried that something like that might happen with it?
Off the top of my head, I can't recall completing a book and then having it shelved and not come out. I don't remember that ever happening. I'm not sure that it hasn't, but I don't remember it. But I've had enough projects fall through that it's like, well, that's a big disappointment, but got to keep moving forward. I was displeased with the thought of having put in at that the better part of 148 pages, pencils and ink, that were just going to be shelved.
Mm-hmm.
But I was disappointed, but I think it really hurt Deborah a lot more, and that's where her tenacity came in.
So, yeah, exactly.
She was not going to let her baby sit on a shelf, and after talking to her about it a couple of times, and she said, "Well, I'm going to look around and see if anybody will buy the rights to publish it." And I know that DC was asking for a pretty hefty sum, but after talking to Deborah a couple of times about it, I sort of think she's serious. She's might actually find somebody to actually get the rights to publish the book. So
yeah.
Hopefully people will get to see it. And she got it done. Ironically, at the time the Minx line tanked, if I hadn't been pulling double duty, because I was working on the Psyblade miniseries that resulted it was a result of that Psyblade pilot season being one of the winners of pilot season. Yay! Mm-hmm. But I was doing that and Posers at the same time. Had I not been, I might have actually been finished with Posers. But ironically, since I was pulling double duty and doing both of those books at once, I wasn't getting Psyblade done nearly fast enough. And I got canned from that book trying to finish Posers, which then got shelved. So I was just sitting there like, wow, this is just a disappointment stew. But
yeah,
it's good the end result was that Posers actually got to see the light of day. And
yeah.
I was like, well, this really sucks. But and Deborah was, I don't want to say she was beside herself, but she was not happy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, rightfully so. But luckily, Image picked it up, and it's available now. For those just tuning in, the book is called Posers. It's a graphic novel by Deborah Vankin, illustrated by Rick Mays. So, Rick, thank you so much for talking with us today, and congratulations. The book looks great. We're going to have to do something about getting a copy out to you because that's just wrong.
I'm going to have to run out and pony up the money and buy one myself. But thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Take care, man, and have a wonderful rest of your Easter.
Thank you. You as well.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye.
You on a debris. That's a Sunday morning market. You were starting through the odds and ends. You was looking for a bargain. I heard your footsteps at the front door. And that old familiar your love song. Gosh, you knew you'd find me waiting there at the top of the stairs. Trouble at the depot with the General Workers Union, and yet that they'll never change a thing. Well, they won't fight and they're not working.